I'm going to talk about money. And I'm not just going to talk about how much money we should be giving to the church or anything. There are churches which spend a lot of time every time they take up an offering telling you how much you ought to be giving. I think people know what they ought to be giving and how they're giving to the church, and the churches should be using that money wisely and well. I want to talk about money generally. We talk about it and we complain about it, whether it's the cost of living going up, whether it's more taxes being asked, whether it's wages not matching what we need, whether it's pensions not doing what they should be doing. There's a lot of talk that we can have about money. But actually, we are curiously shy to tell anybody else how much we own, how much we earn, how much money we have, and what we do with our money. Now, that can be said, well, that's quite natural. It's a very private matter to do with ourselves, and it's not really anybody else's business. The Bible, however, is full of money. It's full of talking about money all the way through it, and about how it's used and how it's misused, and how important it is fundamentally. And as you go through the Bible, let me just put my glasses on because I will need to refer to this. As we go through the Bible, we want to see what it is that God, that it's recorded as God and Jesus doing and saying about it. And one of the things that we've learned to begin with is that the Bible talks about misuse and use of money. Jesus often in situations when we think the Bible just says, this is good, this is bad, this is right, this is wrong. That's not the way Jesus always interprets things. He has nuances in the way he says, actually, you need to look at this way and that way. But there are two things Jesus is absolutely firm about, and one is power and the other is money. And those are the two things he warns us about very clearly. You cannot serve God and mammon, he says in the Sermon on the Mount. And mammon here actually means money or wealth. But it's also developed another sort of sense within the meaning of money or wealth, which is a sort of illness or a disorder. That money, mammon, leads you into a disorder or a problem and a difficulty, because what it does is it takes such a control over our lives that we give money more control than we give God in our lives. That actually in the end, that is the way it is, and that's why we can't ultimately serve both. Mammon is about counting, it's about measuring, it's about bargaining, it's about accumulating, whereas God's worldview is about abundance and generosity and giving, not scarcity or hoarding. And if you remember the talents, the parable about the talents, there is the master of the house gives a talent to each of three servants. And if you remember, he goes away and he tells them that they're to use that. And they comes back, and one of them has made 9 more talents, one has made 4 more talents, now got 5, and one hasn't done anything with his talent and just buried it. And sometimes we feel this is a bit odd sort of parable to talk about, because if it's referring to money, obviously it doesn't just refer to money. What it seems to say is what the world does. The rich get richer and the poor stay poor or miserable. And actually, in the end, Jesus is condemning the poor man who's only just kept the one talent. But I think we need to look at that in a different way. What I think Jesus is saying here is that the gift, the master gives this to the servants to say, here is this gift for me, I want you to make a lot out of it. What are you going to do with it? And so the gift of money carries with it a responsibility to do something good with it. The third servant refused to do anything with his money out of fear of the master. Money is not evil in itself, and it can do a lot of good. So it isn't that the rich are always bad and the poor are always good. It is that the rich have more of a responsibility for money than the poor do. That's true of an individual, it's true of a family, it's true of an organization, of any business, of government, or whatever it you like to call it. You have I believe business has a right for a just profit made for the business, for a company, or other things that are entitled to earn a just profit from what they have producing and the way they're using their money. But they have a big responsibility for the common good, so they need to include not exploiting cheap labour, not getting stuff from other countries and selling to the cheapest labour and the worst conditions. It's got a duty to the client to be able to give a good service or to give a good product, to have good conditions, not to be damaging the environment, being caring and generous. Not working for the common good can often be hidden in a web of lies and financial chaos. We see that around us at the moment, that increasingly this world is governed by money. And so whereas in the past we had a nice bank manager who sat there and he got to know us and he was regarded as being really full of wisdom, and banks were safe as houses and they lent money where they should do. Now banks work by numbers and figures. There's no contact really between us. They don't really understand what the client needs or wants. All it is does this work according to the numbers? Does the computer say no? And all that happens then is that you're pumped with more credit. Come on, have another credit card, take out more money, and we get into the position where people are crippled by debt. And that has led to a world which is now in crisis. We've seen the financial crisis of the banks. We're now talking about climate change, how the world's resources are being used badly and wrongly, and money is at the center of that. So we all have responsibilities as well for the money that we have, and we have to admit that all of us here sitting are rich in comparison with people in a lot of the rest of the world. So we have more responsibility than many others do that. We're caught up in this. Blessed are the consumers. But I want to go beyond things justly and taking our responsibilities seriously. We in the West and in other parts of the world base our money on a system called a capitalist system. Now, I'm not going to compare this with a socialist system or whatever it is. A capitalist system actually works quite well in many ways. That what it is based on is I make a product or I give a service and you pay me this amount of money for it. So it's a quid pro quo. I am buying this. If I could buy it somewhere else cheaper, I might go and buy it there, but then it might not be so good. But I am exchanging my money and you're giving me this product. And that is the basis on which, as it were, a capitalist system bows and works. And in many ways, it seems fair, it makes sense, and in many ways, it does work. But I think we need to recognize that God and Jesus don't follow a capitalist system in the way in which they do things. which is an equality between what we give and what we get. For him, it is all giving. We've been given life, the gift of life. We've been given a body each to actually use that life and experience that life. We've been given a mind. We've been given a soul. We've been given the air we breathe. We've been given ground that we can walk on. We've been able to have soil which produces our food, rain which produces our water. And although we have to pay for some of these things, actually the basis of them is all a gift from God. He doesn't charge anything for these things. On top of that, he gives us free and total forgiveness of our sins. He gives us unconditional love. He gives us mercy. He gives us grace. It's all a gift. We don't deserve any of it. It is all given to us. So does Jesus ask anything in return for these gifts? He does. He does actually ask something. Those servants of the master were asked to do something with their talents that they've been given. Go out and make something of them. And we are asked to do that as well. And that goes right back to God in the Old Testament. Right at the beginning, when the Israelites left Egypt and they went into the Promised Land, it says that God gave them the land. He said, I'm going to give enough land for each family to earn its own living and prosper, as opposed to all the land going to the rich and so on going there. You each have your enough land. But the condition which I want to ask of you is that you use it generously and work for the good of everybody. So when you have a harvest, you don't just take every grain of wheat and grab it for yourself. You leave stuff for the alien and the poor who can come after you and take some of it as well. You give to the widows. You give to the poor. If a family falls on bad times, there is a jubilee provision, which means that if you bought their land off them and you hold it, you don't sell it back to them when they're feeling better. You give it back. You don't ask for any money for it at the jubilee. So there's a whole series of things which, in a sense, God was asking of the people to use as they went into the Promised Land. And that's what he asks of us as well. He asks us to act in that giving way, if you like. And I think that is the heart of, we know that he asks us to forgive. He asks us in the Lord's Prayer, we say, forgive those who are against you, you've sinned against you, just as I forgive you. He wants us to live in grace, in unconditional love, in giving and generosity with all that we have, so that God is living in us. And Paul speaks about how that can happen. He actually speaks about, I've been crucified with Christ and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. So it isn't just a tenth of our income that is due to God. It's everything. It's everything that we possess. It's everything that we have. It's our houses, our cars, our belongings, our, I don't know, our caravans, whatever we have. Actually, we have a responsibility to use them as a giving mechanism to use for other people and for their benefit and for the world at large, is benefit under God. There are some people who have a sort of special calling that God says to them, I want you to give everything away and I want you just to trust me and to live like that. Now, that's not for everybody. He doesn't call everybody to do that, but he does call everybody to take on this responsibility. But though Jesus asks us to do these things, he never forces us to do them. And that's the issue that we face. He is always giving. He goes on giving, even if we're not responding. He goes on forgiving, even if we're not forgiving. He goes on doing things to us, because that is the nature of God. It's sometimes been called a gift economy. People can live in a gift economy where, in fact, what they're doing, what a service they're providing or a product that they're giving to people, they don't ask for an actual reward from those people. What they say is, whatever you feel this is worth to you, just donate that. I'm not asking you for anything, but just donate what you can. And there are organizations that work like that. Children Alive actually gets its food given, but what it does is prepare cook meals, and there's no charge for the cook meal, but an ask for a donation as to what you can afford or what you feel this is worth to you. So that's a different way of working from a normal capitalist way of working, if you like. What happened, of course, we see that in the Old Testament, is that the Israelites didn't do what God asked. They didn't use the Jubilee. They didn't help the poor and the meek. What they did was to use money wrongly, to not to worship God, not to act in any of the ways that he'd asked for. So what happened to them? Well, in the end, they were overcome. They were overthrown. The Assyrians came in. They conquered Jerusalem. They were all taken off in exile. So was that a punishment of God for what they'd done? No, I don't believe it was a punishment of God. I believe it was that actually, if you don't live by the way Jesus wants you to live, if the country as a whole doesn't live by this giving, generosity, openness, abundance, it will collapse, because that's not the basis on which God put it there in the first place. So things start to collapse. Everything gets into a mess, and you find that you get a financial mess, you have a climate mess, you have a this mess, you have a that mess, you have a what all these other messes, because people have not been prepared, and Jesus doesn't force you to do it. And wars and all the things that we've seen over these last period, and awful atrocities that have taken place, are because people have not been willing to do that. It involves a sort of self-emptying of ourselves. Not a denial, but a fulfillment, creating a space for God in our lives to be able to give to others and to use that and to exercise our responsibilities. I was just reading this morning in the Celtic prayer book for today that there was a monk looking out at the world at large. And he said, out there in the world, it can be very cold. It seems to be about luck, good and bad, and the distribution is absurd. And when I look out to the world, I think that's right. Why is it that some people are far richer and some people are far poorer? It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't have any real thing behind it. But if you have got money, and if you have got other things, just the smallest things, we have that responsibility. I've spoken quite strongly about this, the way Jesus would have us live, but it isn't easy. Hannah and I have lived and been sustained by God when we've had nothing for periods, literally nothing. And we've lived with quite a lot of money. And I can tell you, it is more difficult to live with quite a lot of money than it is to live without money. Because you have this responsibility. How much am I going to give to myself? How much am I going to give to my family and the people there? And how much am I actually going to give out and share and have my house filled with other people or whatever it is that we're doing? And I can say it is more difficult. But each of us faces that to a greater or lesser degree, not once and for all, but almost every day, every week, every month, every year that we live. Amen.